Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
Ryan Seacrest here. When you have a busy schedule, it's important to maximize your downtime. One of the best ways to do that is by going to ChumbaCasino.com. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino games like spin slots, bingo, and solitaire that you can play for free for a chance to redeem some serious prizes. So hop on to ChumbaCasino.com now and live the Chumba life. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply.
Previously on the Pavement Top 50.
Song number 11 on the countdown is the second track from the debut long play. It's Trigger Cut, Wounded Kite at 17. Martel, what are your initial thoughts of this song being number 11?
It's a great track. It's one that I've, you know, has been in my life for a long time. I actually bought the single, which I'm holding up here.
Cool.
Yeah. Bought that back in the 90s. I was listening to it in preparation for meeting with you, JD, and I've never really thought too much about the lyrics, so I tried to give that a bit more thought. I love the tune. Loved it on tour, on this recent tour. I thought they did a brilliant job of the track for that.
Hey, this is Westy from the rock and roll band Pavement, and you're listening to The Countdown.
Hey, it's JD here, back for another episode of our Top 50 Countdown for seminal indie rock band Pavement. Week over week, we're going to count down the 50 essential Pavement tracks that you selected with your very own top 20 ballots. I then tabulated the results using an abacus and three bears. One that couldn't count, one that counted too quickly, and one that was just right. I named him Julio. I love Julio. How will your favorite song fare in the rankings? You'll need to tune in to find out. So there's that. This week, I'm joined by Pavement superfan Jen Jones, a.k.a. Jen Echo. Thank you, Jen, for your time today. How are you doing, motherfucker?
I'm doing great. Excited for this opportunity.
Oh, I'm excited, too. This is going to be fun. Let's get right into it, then.
Let's do this.
Tell me about your Pavement origin story.
Well, you know, I've heard people talk about like the first time they heard it and things like that. And I couldn't tell you that. I know I had gotten Demolition Plot and Perfect Sound as it came out. I was started working in an independent record store in a college town when I was 16 years old. So that was 1989. And my high school sweetheart just seemed to know. I don't know how he knew. Well, he had cable TV too, so that helped. But he always knew what, on the first mixtape he ever made me in 1988, it had Teenage Riot on it, which had just come out. It had Pixie Surfer Rosa, which nobody would really, I hadn't heard of that in 1988. Like, it just blew my mind. Had Freak Scene on it. Like, it was just crazy. So he definitely was my big influence. So I'm positive that like he was the one who was like, you got to check this out. But then right after high school, the Summer Babe single came out a few months before Slanted and Enchanted had come out. And that sounded so different. Like, they like finally were cohesive instead of just kind of fun. On that, and I don't know if you have an original 7-inch, they engraved, I don't know what the inside groove before the label is called, but they engraved on side A, why penetration, and on side B, why not envelopment? And that just added to the whole mystery. Like, you know, I don't even think there was an insert in Perfect Sound. I don't have one anymore, but I have it, but I don't know. There's not an insert, but I still have the insert for
No insert.
Yeah, but there's an insert in demolition plot. So it makes this thing about Kelly was in charge of played the Chevrolet and kept Gary in line. And you know, their names were SM and Spiral Stairs. And like, there was no pictures to be found. This is even before there was internet that at least more mere mortals could get. And so it was just a mystery, right? So now if you flash forward to 92, I had broken my sweetheart's, my high school sweetheart's heart before the end of high school. I broke up with him because he was going off to college and I was not going there too. And so he was, you know, not my biggest fan anymore. But we had gone to, we had a squad in high school and we saw so many great shows and had so many great adventures as kids that really liked indie rock. And, you know, me being, and Andy worked in another record store. So we just had a lot of inside connections, just even at 16 year olds. And so we saw a lot of shows together. And so when my high school music posse said they were heading down to Columbus to, cause Andy went to school near Columbus, to see Pavement, I was like, I'm coming along. And they're like, well, you know, it's kind of Andy's thing. And I'm like, I don't give a shit. I'm not going to miss Pavement. That's the closest they're coming. So day of the show, we all gather at Andy's house and we get in the car and there's me, my friend, Andy, and then our friends from high school, Ian and Chris. And Andy tells us we have to pick up his college friend on the way. And so we're driving down and it's pretty tense in the car. And that was pretty much always the case. It was me and a bunch of dudes heading down somewhere to see a great band. And we drive up to this cemetery. And like, whether or not it's true, I think in the spirit of all kind of like Pavement stories in the beginning, like how they, you know, drove mules for wheels and whatever kind of things, they made up stories. Like, I swear Nick jumped up out of a grave. He had a summer job digging graves at a cemetery and like he was dirty.
Oh my God.
And he just jumps in the car and we still have a ways to go. You know, like I think Columbus is like maybe 2.5 hours. So this was just like in Toledo, which is only like 45 minutes away. Anyway, so now there's four dudes in the car. And what I remember about that was they were, you know, this is what dudes did in the early 90s in car rides is they tried to stump each other with Star Wars trivia, which, you know, if it doesn't involve Princess Leia or Yoda, like, I don't have anything to add to that. Yeah, I saw them when I was 5, for fuck's sake, but not, you know. So, you know, I'm just rolling my eyes in the back and everybody's pretending I'm not there, or at least Andy is. And we get to Columbus and we think the first thing we should do is just at least figure out where the club is, right? Because A, we're all, you know, 19 years old. So, you know, it needs to be an 18 and over show for us to get in a place that we can't like smooth talk our way into. And it's at this bar called Stashes. And we find Stashes and we just peek inside. And the day drinkers there look like a very rough crowd in the sense they look like really hard living blue collar workers that are day drinking. So we go and we walk around the town and we get something to eat. And that was, I remember the other weird thing about that day was we go to get something to eat. And there's like this place, it's like, I think like a KFC, Taco Bell, and like a Pizza Hut. And you just go to one window and you can order anything from any one of those places. And you go to another window and pick it up. And
sounds like, so magical.
I know, it's just like so weird. So it's something for everybody, right? If you want a pizza, Mexican or chicken, right? But there's a record store called Used Kids. And, you know, we just spent the day kind of doing all that stuff. And when we, after lunch, we noticed that there was a van outside the club. And we were like, that's got to be Pavement's van, because it was a white van that was decorated in black Sharpie. And they just like written on it, like they write on all their singles and everything else, just decorated it. Right. And we see them unloading. And so this is the first any of us have ever seen any member of Pavement. And honestly, they're only a few years older than us, you know, like, maybe 5 or 6, but like they're just young dudes. And so, you know, we kind of chat them up and And we're really excited about the show. And so we get in there pretty early because we want to make sure we get a good spot. You know, we have our ideas of where's a good spot to stand and things like that. And this is a really small venue with a low ceiling. It's a bar, really. And so by the time the door is open, I know Scott was working the merch stand. And I think maybe Bob was there working the merch stand, but that part isn't vivid to me. But I know I was talking to Scott at the show, you know, at the merch stand, saying how I was really excited for this show and how I had everything on vinyl. And he said, "Do you have Slay tracks?" And I was like, "Well, everything but Slay tracks on vinyl." And he's like, "But you know, don't worry, we're gonna put out this thing, you know." And I think he told me it was Westing, or maybe they didn't have a name yet. But he's like, "It's gonna be all of our singles, because we're just trying to do something for Jag City." You know, now that we're on Matador and clearly gonna, you know, blowing up, you know, like give Drag City one more thing. And so he's like, you'll be able to have those songs at least on vinyl when that comes out. And I was like, just all excited, you know, about this whole prospect. So the opening band was called the Toiling Midgets. And I can't even really tell you about it, except that, you know, what we thought was one of those day drinking, hard living locals was acting the fool. He was hanging from the rafters. He was doing handstands. He was just annoying all the people that were excited to see Pavement for the first time, you know, and just really annoying the crowd. So as we were waiting for Pavement, you know, he was keeping up his antics and stuff like that. And the guys come out, Les, Gary, and say, "Hey, has anybody seen our drummer?" So that salty old dude starts trying to go up to the front, and the bros just started taking him down, like thought he was like, "Sit down, like you're not going to get up there." And Malcolmus goes, "No, that's our drummer." And so they let Gary get up there and they play this show. And I don't know that I started right in front of Malcolmus, but I got my way up to right in front of Malcolmus for the whole show. And all show, I thought like I was getting hit with his sweat. Like, I mean, I'm just like, but I don't mind. It was just, it was a great time to see him, because every song you wanted to hear, it was just Slanted and Enchanted and everything before it. So there was just nothing that was like, you were like, you know. And so after the show, like I was on the Malcolmus side of this, it wasn't even a very big stage. And there's pictures, this guy named Jay Fotoman, Fotoman. He took tons of concert photos in that club in around Columbus at that time. And he has pictures from that Pavement show, although none of us are in them. But still, it's just great to see those pictures. And I find my squad, because they're my ride home. And it's just all four boys are just standing there, like, because, you know, they were their own roadies at that point. So they're having to break down their shit and take it back out to that markered up van. And all the boys are like, "Oh, what should we ask about? Should we ask about tuning? Should we ask about pedal effects? Should we ask about whatever it was?" They were trying to figure out if they had a chance to ask one question, what were they going to ask?
What would it be? Yeah.
And I get a tap on my shoulder, and I'm sure it's going to be somebody saying like, "You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here." And I turn around, and it's Malcolmus. I'm 19 years old. And he goes, and he's kind of like shyish, and he's like, "Hey, I just wanted to say I'm sorry for spitting on you all show." And I was like, "Oh, that was spit." He's like,
"Oh no, man."
I get kind of, you know, get a lot of saliva in my mouth. And I'm like, "Oh, I didn't buy it. I thought it was sweat. You know, I wouldn't have been any better." And then, you know, the four boys that I was with saw that as their opportunity to be like, "What about the tuning? And what about the pedals? And blah, 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 blah." But, you know, I was smitten. He knows me, and he spit on me all night, right? So that was 92, and anxiously awaited Crooked Rain to come out. And I started at the record store in 89, and I had a hiatus, 93 to 94. And that's just a dark time that we don't talk about. But at that time, I was working at Urban Outfitters. And I met my friend Jess. Now, Jess and I went to high school together, but I didn't really know her. I had my own squad and we did our own thing, and she had hers. But we ended up at Urban Outfitters at the same time working. And she had just gotten back from living a year in Athens. And we just started talking about bands we had seen, and both of us had seen Pavement. So when we heard they were coming, you know, we got tickets to a show in Chicago and we got tickets to a show in Detroit. And I'm going to let her tell those stories because, I swear, meeting bands is in her DNA. Her mom was a Grand Funk Railroad groupie, and she can tell you all about that kind of thing. But she just had all kinds of great ideas on how to get noticed by a band, but for the purpose of becoming friends with them. So we went prepared. We had prepared all summer to be able to, like, or however, I don't remember what time of year it was, but we prepared for months to, like, make sure that they noticed us in Chicago, but make sure we met them in Detroit, like, on our home turf. Because we assumed that, like, you know, Chicago at that time had, like, Urge Overkill, Liz Phair, I don't know if Jesus was there or not, but like, they just had a lot of bands, and we just figured, like, backstage at that show was going to be all kinds of celebrities and we wouldn't be noticed. But in Detroit, we didn't, you know, think that we'd have that kind of competition. So we thought, you know, just make sure we're on their radar in Chicago and we'll make our splash in Detroit. And we did. And like I said, I'm not going to tell you all those stories
because
he was the mastermind of that. And I don't think any of this would have happened without her amazing talents and ability to think about how to interact, because it never would have occurred to me. I mean, it was a big no duh after the fact, but at the time I was like, that's brilliant. I've never thought of that. And I'd been seeing and meeting bands, like, through the proper channels for, you know, years at that point. But I'll pick it up.
Well, I'll tell you what, if you want to go back and listen to Jessica's episode, that is song number 20. So you can go back and listen to that, and then come back to this episode and Jen will pick up where
she's left off.
Yeah.
There'll be a couple places where we'll fill in each other's gaps.
Sure.
But for Crooked Rain, there was pre-video and post-video. So they started, at least they were through Detroit for the first leg of Crooked Rain, and it was pretty specifically Crooked Rain and things before Slanted, Enchanted, and you know, before Westing ever came out, Watery Domestic came out, and that was like a totally different sound that was really exciting. Those four songs were like,
it's so amazing.
The whole album, like, we were excited. And then their first Peel Sessions it sounded like they were songs made at the same time that Watery was made. I mean, they all.
How did you get access? How did you get access to the Peel stuff? Do you remember?
Well, they made 7 inches of them.
Oh, wow. So
this is the first Peel Session. And what I like about this one, I'll bring it up to this one had some, like, fun facts on the back.
Oh, cool.
So it says Scott's first record was Joy to the World by Three Dog Night, and Gary's first record bought was Purple People Eater by Alley Oop. The dumbest thing Mark ever done was spilt water in the face of a member of Nation of Ulysses. I thought he was someone else. N of U is one of my favorite bands, and it was a bummer. I apologize profusely. That's what Mark said the dumbest thing he'd ever done back in, what, 1992 was. The dumbest thing ever done by Malcolm is, he says, he left Disneyland by himself. His parents had to hop off the Small World ride to look for him.
Oh, my God.
This one, Robert says, earliest memory was peeing off the high dive at the local swimming pool at the age of 4. So we got some fun facts on the...
Who published those?
Oh, who knows? They were bootlegs.
Right.
Like,
okay.
This one actually said, this one, which is the one that has, this was a good one because this one actually had the catering song on it, which became Easily Fooled. So this one is the one that has Brink in the Cloud, Orange Black, Tartar Martyr, random title, but it says plus 7 and plus 5 songs. And so it says Peel Session February 94. And this one actually does say that this is Scott's label, Treble Kicker and Cold Drive.
Oh, cool.
His parents' house.
Cool.
This one, let's see if it says anything on it. UK JP Sessions made in the USA is all it says. So I don't, this, I mean, they were bootlegs as far as I know. And then this one was, this is the 92 one. And again, I just think they were bootlegs, but because I worked in a record store and, you know, I would just tell the buyer to get anything Pavement and I would pick it up. So,
right.
This one also doesn't say, this one says Good Times GT01. So Good Times label is the 92 Teal Session. But yeah, so that's how I had those. And, man, we put these on tapes right away, and these became like especially like 17. I think that's a Jess memory, but like, you know, doing the see myself come running back, and then she go running back, and then I'd say running back, and we just have great sing-alongs on our many, because everything was about between 2 hours and 5 hours from Ann Arbor to catch other shows, so we had a lot of driving to do between shows. So a lot of singing in the car type things, but so in the time between May, they came back through in October, and that was after, I believe, well, for sure after Cut Your Hair's video hit MTV, and maybe the Gold Sounds video had hit, I'm not sure, but that changed everything, quite honestly, like totally different. Totally different makeup of the crowd and the vibe, but
really
not in a bad way. It's just like more people got aware. Band, right? And so, that second time they came through, they did two shows. They always played St. Andrew's Hall, and we call it St. Andy's in Detroit, which I think might be like a 1500 capacity. It's kind of an interesting place because they have three floors and they can hold shows on any of the three floors. The main floor you walk into is where there's about 1500 capacity, and it has a balcony that kind of overlooks the floor that you can stand in, and then a pretty massive main floor. And then downstairs is the shelter, and then upstairs is the Burns Room. And the Burns Room usually is not a venue, but usually the green room or the backstage area. But, so they came back through, and we had already met them, in May. And between May and this time, we had written one of our famous fan letters that we really wish we would have like made a Xerox copy of. But what I remember about the fan letter we wrote is, you know, the record store people would drop off zines they made, and there was a zine that was at the record store with an interview with Glenn Danzig, but like really silly questions. And we just crossed out anywhere it said Danzig and wrote in Pavement. And we thought it was fucking hilarious. I wish I had a copy of it, but we don't. but we, you know, Jess was really good with writing fan letters too. So we sent that off in hopes that, you know, they wouldn't forget us between May and October. And so once again, we were waiting outside St. Andrews in the middle of the afternoon for them to come to soundcheck. And as they drove up, I think it was Scott who rolled down the window, was like, "We got your letter. Where is Ypsilanti?" And it's called Ypsilanti, but where is Ypsilanti? Because I must have put my return address where I was at college. So we're like, "They got the letter. They remember us. This is so great." And the one thing I remember about that, besides them like, yelling that they got our letter and were excited to see us again, was there was a solar eclipse happening at the time. And whether or not this aspect is true, it's true in my mind. Like, Westy was like an Eagle Scout, or, you know, he's definitely outdoorsy and has many skills that are outdoorsy. So, like, you know, he knew to like make a pin box look through thing. And trying to figure out what he could make that out of, where the rest of us just stacked up all of our sunglasses. We thought if we stacked enough sunglasses on, we could but we're all standing there like, you know, taking turns with sunglasses. Like, we're like, do you see anything? But we're just like, this is just like heavenly and divine. Like, you know, they put on a solar eclipse for us too. And so there was two shows. It was early and a late, all ages, and then 18 and over. And that was the beautiful part about St. Andrews, is they had 18 and over, not 21 and over. But And I remember there's two openers, and for sure Povo was one of them, but I don't remember the other one for sure. I know, I mean, I have a picture of it when we went the next night to Cincinnati. It was the Wolverton Brothers, but I don't think that was who was in Detroit. And I was pretty excited about that. Like, I had the Vibracoba single when it came out, and then the Crow Crane or Core Crane Secret. And so, like, to see Povo in 94 was pretty exciting too. But and I remember the thing about Povo is, like, you know, we went backstage between shows, and between shows we walked around what was called Greek Town at the time. They've now enclosed it as a casino and everything else like that, but we just kind of walked around and then came back for the second show. And after the second show, we had what was our famous photo shoots, where we actually thought to take pictures because we didn't take pictures the first time. And those tended to be, like, this was early days of internet too, like in 1994.
Right.
And where I had access to a computer was in the basement at my college. And, like, we didn't even have computers with like Netscape on them. Well, there were some, but those were for the, like, computer science kids, and they hogged them all day. Yes. So we just had, like, dummy terminals where we had to be like CT, you know, STMP and stuff like that. And there was this BBS out of Iowa.
Yeah,
that I don't remember what the room number is. I think it was in the 900s, but it was kind of the alternative room. And that was where people with internet access were discussing Pavement. And that's where I'm pretty sure launched what was considered the first Pavement mailing list. And that's how we communicated, because we all had emails, at least, like, through college and stuff. And so through Stanford, it was like Pavement at Stanford mailing list, whatever. And you could either get every single email people sent or a digest. But what we called each other were listers, because we were on this list. And when that guy, and I don't know who that guy was, graduated from Stanford and it was going to get closed down, some other guy in Australia opened it up, and everybody moved over there. And that was around the time of maybe Bright in the Corners.
Okay.
But yeah, that's how we all kind of communicated in the earliest days. And there was a kid in Washington whose email was Mookie Blaylock, but I don't think it was, like, any better or anything. I don't know. I do know, like, I didn't have a way to scan pictures, but I had these pictures, and he wanted pictures for his fan page for Pavement. Because back then, when we did finally, like, I came back from Christmas break and we finally had Netscape, and you could ask Jeeves, or you could ask Yahoo, you know? And, and if you did that and you put in Pavement, there was some very cutting edge concrete company that had a website.
Of course.
But like, you're like, who's looking for this on the web, right? But this kid out of Washington State was creating a web page, so we sent him the pictures we had taken in the October Detroit backstage thing, and he put them up on his web page, and so what I had been told after that was, like, some people, you know, like girls and boys, like, you know, I had that printed out and put it on my wall, because it's the first you saw, they really saw their pictures, you know, and interacting with fans, right? So those were famous photos. And this is the one, I have it in a frame that most people printed out at the time. It's kind of, can
that's
you see
so
it there?
Cool. Yeah.
These were spark guns, you know, they shot, like, they just went and had sparks in them from Big Fun in Cleveland, Ohio. And we thought we were doing a Charlie's Angel pose, but we didn't quite get it right. But that's
all right. That's close.
That's 19 years. Maybe I'm 21 at this point, and she's 20, and that's a very young Malcolmist with a Scott going, "What's all that fucking noise back there?" And that was.
I will try and remember to put that photo in the show notes so the people can see what you just described.
Yeah, but that was, like, one of the first pictures of Pavement on the internet that people saw. And but they asked us, like, where's your shirts? You know, they really liked the shirts that we had made them, that Jess will tell you about, or has told you about. And And so we thought, and they asked us what other shows we were doing. And I'm pretty sure that's the, well, I think it was after this one. So we decided to go home and get our shirts and then head to Cincinnati for the next night. And so that really? Was the first time we, besides Chicago, which we'd gone to a lot of shows for before, like that was the first, that was my, I've only been to Cincinnati one other time, and that was also for Pavement. But so this was my first time to Cincinnati, and it was the first time we were going to stay in a hotel, and it was just all very, very exciting. We took a lot of like just stupid pictures of
pictures
like
were so precious in the 90s, right? Like, well, I mean, we just didn't have cameras the same way.
Well, and like, you know, the thing is like, you don't know until you go and spend money to develop them if they even came out. So
that's right.
You had a lot of fucking duds and you're like, yeah. Damn it, I didn't even catch that. And we mostly just use those disposable ones, you know, like
that's right. That's what I did too. Know?
Yeah.
That's why I have 12 pictures from the 90s.
Yeah, I mean, it was, there's so many bad pictures.
Right.
So we go to that show and they told us they put us on the guest list. And this was our first, like, not having just to show up and meet them and walk them in and watch soundcheck. They were going to put us on a guest list. And we get there and we give them.
What year is this? Sorry.
This is still 94. This is October.
Because this is in Cincinnati. Right. Yes. Yeah.
So this is October 94, the second leg
post-video.
Yeah, post-video of this is the second leg of Crooked Rain, Crooked Rain. And in the second leg is when they started like playing songs from what would be the upcoming album, Wowie Zowie. So they, in the second leg, they started playing what we called the sedan song, because the one lyric that we could make out that we thought was way out of place in Grounded was about a sedan. We really liked really? Grounded. But we were like, play the sedan song. And Scott got to do Why Didn't I Ask? We'd scream, Why Didn't I Ask? And that became Kennel District. And we would be like, play it, you know, whatever song, play it, what? You know, and that became AT&T. So there's a lot of songs on that leg they started playing that would end up on a later record. And it was a fun time. And we get to the club and we're so excited to be on the guest list, and we give them our ID and they're like, you're not here. You know, there's no Jen Jones on this
oh,
guest list.
No.
And I'm like, what? And just right then, like, we're just like devastated and like, what are we going to do? It's sold out. And right then Bob walks by and goes, hey, it's Jen and Jess Detroit. And they're like, oh, that's what this is. Jen and Jess Detroit. They didn't know our names. And they wrote us down as Jen and Jess Detroit on their friends list. And we're like, yeah, we're Jen. I'm like, I can never claim Jen Detroit. There's so many more cool Jens in Detroit than me. But that's who we are. So if it wasn't for Bob walking by, you know, that night might never have happened.
What a fateful moment.
I know. It was like, oh, geez. And so we're like, hey, you know, do you want to know our real names? You know, and that's when they kind of gave us the pro tip. Like, listen, you know, our booking agent is Botch Billions. This is his email. If ever you need a show or whatever, you know, he's always at a computer and he can always, he'll always get us the message, but you know, we'll never remember it. And they still call me Jen Echo to this day. Cause that was my email, Jen_Echo@yahoo.com. That was my first email. So that was also like our turning point. And so I started emailing Botch anytime I was going to be, if I knew where I was going to be, you know, back then tickets were super cheap. I think I shared with you the flyer from my first show and it was like $5 in advance and $8 at the door in 1992.
Jeez, can you imagine?
I feel like all of them were pretty affordable, but you know, I was making like $5 an hour and living on my own. And in college. So I needed the help at the time. I buy my tickets now, but back then I needed help. And that night it was just such a fun show. when we left, we needed to go get gas, and they also needed gas. And we ran them. It was the first time we saw them in the wild, you know, like, oh my God, they're real people. Like they also have to fuel their vehicles. And it was just really exciting to like be like, oh yeah, we gotta fuel ours too. You know, like it just felt like, wow, you know, like, I mean, we were really young and super starstruck. But from there, after 94, they signed up for Lollapalooza in 1995.
Right.
And so they didn't do a lot of touring pre Lollapalooza. And I went to the first Lollapalooza in like, was that 91? And I swore I was never going to go again. Like, I just fucking hated that kind of scene. It was just, it felt like something out of Lord of the Flies there in Detroit. And when they first started throwing food, and when there was no food, they started throwing grass. And when they didn't have any more sod to throw, they started throwing, you know. So I was like, I never want to see this again. But then no. Pavement was playing it on 1995. So I was like, well, fuck, I got to go because I'm not going to miss Pavement if they come through Detroit. So, but the one other show we caught in the Midwest, at that time, they came to the Agora Ballroom with Magic Dirt in 95. And we had, Scott had said he wanted us to make him a shirt like ours. And so we did, Jess did. And she's just really, really creative and talented. And, at that show, they had a new tour manager. His name was Nigel. And, he had a stack, like probably of like this tall, of like 4x4 paintings. And this was all the artwork that Stephen King had submitted for Wowie Zowie. And it was all the work, it's all the artwork they didn't take. So
wow.
Nigel was like, you can each pick one. And I had this one and I liked it because it was the only one that's painted on like on an angle, like so it was like a diamond instead of a square. And it was like sailboats, and I don't know where it is, but I feel like it, and I don't know if I still have it, but
you must.
I didn't give it on purpose, but I have a lot of other Stephen Keens at this point, but that one was really, really special, and Nigel was a really nice guy, and I feel like that's when we met Remco, who's been their sound guy at least since then, if not before.
Right.
But that's, I think, when we really met Remco. And you know, it was a fun time, and they still were having fun when they were playing. And I would say then the next we got to see them, they weren't coming through Detroit in '96, but I had a friend living in Boulder, Colorado. He went there for college, and you know, they were, and I always said I'd go visit him. So they were in February of '96. They were playing in Denver, and we thought we can't just do one show, and that would have been our ninth show. Our first shows were different. She did hers in Athens, as you heard, and mine was in Detroit, but 2 through 10 were together. And uh-huh. So we were like, well, we got to catch another one, and the closest one was Albuquerque, 8 hours away. So we rented a car in Denver.
Shit.
And then drove to Albuquerque in a day. And I think she told you about our Albuquerque adventure. I did all the driving, and you know, the one part I'll tell you is just about getting there, because again, we were super poor, but we were super rich in experiences.
Right.
And like we were, you know, the right age at the right time with the right connections and just the right get up and go, right? So My car back home was an 86 Subaru, and I think the speedometer went up to 80, and if you got over 60, it was shaking real bad and losing parts. So in my mind's eye, if it's not shaking, I'm not going more than 60 miles an hour. But in this was a brand new Subaru rented, but it didn't have cruise control.
Oh,
and the first
shit.
Time I looked down at the speedometer, I was going like over 90 miles an hour, because there is nothing out there on whatever road that is. Like, it's just prairie on either side of you, and it's just grass. And so you can't really tell how fast you're going by things going by. And I was like, oh, you got to help me watch the speedometer, because there's no other cars. There's no nothing. I can't, you know, help me watch this. And so we're driving along, and And all of a sudden I see this billboard and it says Point of Interest, Trinidad, Colorado. And I think, what could be a point of interest out here? Well, it's the fucking cop behind the billboard clocking everybody going by that. And so like,
oh no.
And when I see his lights, I look down and I'm doing 98 miles an hour. I'm like, fuck, you were supposed to help me. You're supposed to watch this. And, so I pull over and I'm like, oh, I'm in trouble. And Jess is like, cry. And I'm like, I don't think I have it in me. I can't just cry, you know, like, and so the cop comes up and he's like, do you know how fast you're going? I was like, 98 miles an hour. And he's like, you could just tell he was just like, fuck, why did you say that? Like, you just say, no, how fast was I going, officer?
Right.
And he was like, why were you going so fast? And I told him about my Subaru and how it's not shaking. And he's like, do you know that's a felony? Like, you could do jail time. That's like, you know, you're not allowed to go more than 15 miles over the speed limit. And I was like, what's the speed limit? You know, I didn't even know if it was 55 or what it was. It probably
oh my gosh.
And so he's like, you're going to have to come back and you're going to have to go to court. And I'm like, I don't even live here. Like, and if they take away my license, like, can they do that in Michigan if this is Colorado? And he's like, well, here's the DA's number. You know, it's going to get referred to the DA. So you need to call them and tell them. And so, like, I'm driving the rest of the way because just wasn't feeling good. And so I'm driving the rest of the way going, like, trying so hard not to go any faster. And I was pretty tense by the time we pulled up there. Again, before, as they were loading for sound check, so we got to do sound check, I've heard already what she told you about our time there, because it was a really fun, tense show. I will say that they asked me what dedication I wanted, and I really wanted Angel Carver Blues Mellow Jazz Docent, because I really wanted to hear Malcolm say, ask me if I want to be fucked. Which he did not do. Like, they played it for me, but he didn't say it. And I was glad on this, at least in Iceland, Bob said that part when they were playing it now. But there in Albuquerque, I got my dedication. I got the song I wanted to hear, but I didn't get the part I wanted to hear. So after Albuquerque, Jess and I party ways, and I ended up moving to Boulder. That June of 96. And that kind of created a dry spell for me. Like in 97, Pavement toured the hell out of Bright in the Corners, but they only played two shows within 8 hours of Denver. And that was really? In Denver and in Omaha. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. I mean, Denver is landlocked, man. Like, it is really far from everything. Like, to drive out of Denver to get to the next thing is like 8 hours. So that's either going south to Albuquerque or east to Omaha.
Right.
And so I was really excited when they were coming to the Ogden. The Apples and Stereo opened up for them in 97.
Cool.
But when I got there, Remco was smoking outside and he's like, man, they're steer clear. They're in a bad way. Forgot that this was not on the same time zone as Utah. We were late. Like, everybody's in a bad mood. I don't remember if that was the time that their amps cracked. I think that might have been earlier in 96, but maybe this was even 98. Maybe this was 98. 96 or 97 or 98. But it was Ogden and then Omaha. So I'd have to go look at some kind of website of other shows, because I don't remember which, if this was 97 or 98. But Apples and Stereo opened up, and Apples and Stereo and Elephant Six was the one reason I thought I could live in Denver, you know, that Elephant Six and Nutrimote Hotel were recording stuff there.
Really? Didn't know that.
Yeah, it was, well, my friend lived there too, but yeah, that was where Elephant Six was like located in that time. And I just thought, you know, it was like the new Seattle, like all the best music was coming out of Denver. And I'd seen the Apples and Stereo on Halloween of 95, there was a secret Flaming Lips show at St. Andrews. And, you know, I went to see that, but my friend Joe, who got me tickets, said, you have to get there early. Because I got to sneak you in. And I was like, wow. Oh my God, is this an opener? I don't know. And, I got there and the Apples blew me the fuck away. Like, yeah. Oh man, they played the shit out of Fun Trick Noisemaker. And I was like, how the flip have I never heard of this band? And I went back to my record store that next day. At that point, we had an annex called the Annex, and it was just all the indie rock. And my pop guru, his name is Tim Sendra. He was there and I was like, have you ever heard of the Apples in Stereo? And he was like, oh man, you know, did they open last night? I heard something, but I wasn't sure. Oh, he couldn't believe me. And so then he started telling me all about the Elephant Six. And at that point, even On Avery Island wasn't out yet, but you know, there's some Nutri-Milk Hotel singles and there's some Olivia Trimmer Control. And he said, but you know, Nutri-Milk Hotel was the one to watch. And very soon thereafter, that one had come out and just loved them. And so when I needed to get out of Ann Arbor, that seemed like a good place to go. So anyway, at this show, the Apples open up and they're not that good. Or no. They're still good as a opener. That's what it was. They played really good. But like when I'd see them as headliners, when they'd headline their own shows at like smaller clubs around Denver, they were just not as good. And so I thought, oh, maybe they just really bring their A game when they're playing with their idols or something, you know, because at that point I really didn't care if I saw the Apples in Stereo because I had seen them a lot of times around Denver and they weren't that good, but they really brought it to open for Pavement that time. And while they were there, Scott came out and brought me, you know, came out and said, oh, come watch with me on the side of the stage. And we did, and we talked and everything. And then Pavement played, but there was a lot of fighting and stuff. And after he's like, you know, come find me after the show. And I did. And I was like, you know, where are the other guys? And he's like, oh, they're upstairs. And I said, well, let's go up there and say hi. And he's like, oh, I'll just go wait out on the bus. So I went up and talked with Mark and Steven were there. And at that time, there had been a military fighter jet that just went off the radar and nobody could find them. And we were all talking about what could have happened. And, back before, you know, libertarians took over Atlas Shrugged, it was like, oh, you just found like John Galt and he's living up there with Dagny and everybody else. But, and just all you need is a Leatherman tool because it's got everything on it. But that was fun. And then, you know, when it was time to leave, I went back out because I wanted to go by the bus and say goodbye to Scott. And there was like some of the Apples guys like nervous to knock on the door. And I wasn't nervous. I just knocked on it and was like, OK, I'll see you later. And the next day, I think it was the next day. I don't know if it was a couple of days later, but my roommate who came with me to that show, she drove me to Omaha. And that show was bonkers as well. I wanted to say how I came to have advanced copies of the two different colors of Dancing with Elders, which became We Dance.
Because
this guy was from Detroit who made these, and met him at this free London Suede meet and greet dinner, and he had an advanced copy of Wowie Zowie on tape, and without any kind of, they all had alternative names and it wasn't like in order and sequenced or anything. And Malcolmus said he would give him a song for his label. And so it was called Dancing with Elders at the time, but it became We Dance. And Joe was really hoping it wouldn't be on the record, but it was, but it wasn't a single, but that's the
very cool
of those singles. That was pre-Wowie Zowie. And Joe factors into a later show. But that was a fun, I mean, he was just in Detroit and he worked in a off the record at Royal Oak at the time, but he had that little label. But so anyway, we're on our way to Omaha now in 97 or 98. And we're having troubles on the road. Like my friend has this like 91 Jetta and it just keeps dying on us. And we're like, oh, we can't stop the car. We got to just keep moving because it won't just die when we're not whipper moving. And so we get to Omaha and we scope out the Fun Center, I think is what it was called. And the Fun Center was like must've been the thing in town where it was a bowling alley and a volleyball pits and it had a bar and I don't even know what else it had, but it was all in one place. But while we were there and checking it out, our car died in the parking lot. And so we're like, well, you know, I guess we'll just walk over to this restaurant and have lunch. And we did. And you know, when we walked in, like, the bowling alley was packed. It was crazy packed. And we're like, wow, like, this is, bowling's a big thing here in Omaha on whatever day of the week this is. Like, it is, like, completely full. And then we go eat, and we don't go for very long, and we're right across, like, we're looking at the parking lot, and we don't see people come and go. And we go back, after lunch, we go back in there, because we have nothing else to do. We're going to have to get jumped and to get back to our hotel or something. Like, you know, this is before cell phones, before, like, Ubers. You know, you're just kind of fucked. I guess you could call a taxi. We could call a taxi, but we were where we needed to be for the night until we needed to be asleep, essentially. So we just figured somebody would jump our car after the show. So we go back to the fun center, but now the bowling alley is packed, but it's completely different people, like, completely different people. And we're like, how is there, like, a mass exodus of a full bowling alley? And then, like, is there another door? Like, what is it? And so that just felt like we were in the Twilight Zone. And we go sit in the bar, and we're getting a drink, and we're asking them about the venue, because we're not even sure, like, where in this building a concert place would be. And the guy's like, oh, it's a really great room. It's got a balcony. And I'm like, looking around, and I'm like, is there a second floor here? Like, how would it have a balcony, you know? And he's like, oh, maybe it's more like a loft. And I was like, oh, okay. When it's got good sound. And he's like, yeah. And so we see that, like, people are starting to line up to get into the venue, and it's not that big. So if you want to get up to the front or whatever, or a good spot, you got to get in line. So the line was, like, out by the volleyball pitch. And we're, like, you know, standing in line, we get up there, and there's this small person on a stool. And they ask, they ask for my ID, and, or I don't exactly remember what happened, but they wanted something. And I asked, like, what do you, you know, do you need my ID for drinking? And this little person is like, can't you read? And I'm like, looking around for what am I supposed to read? But, like, at my hip level was a sign saying, if you wanted to have a wristband for drinking, you needed your ID out. And, you know, that was not my eye level, but that was probably eye level for this little person who put it up. But yeah, I didn't see that sign, but I was like, God, I'm in the Twilight Zone. And so then I go in, and there is not a loft, and there is not a balcony. It's like a sunken living room. Like, there's a step up from the sunken part, but otherwise that's the whole of that whole loft balcony thing. Right. And I go, I'm like, I better, you know, take my pee break now, 'cause you don't want to leave your spot during the show. And I go into what says the ladies' room, but there's urinals. And now there's this bar in Denver, in Boulder, called the Dark Horse. And the Dark Horse has this tricky bathroom where it says women, but it's on a hand pointing at the door next to it. And then the men's is on a hand, it says men's, but it's on a hand pointing at this door. So the women's, the one that says women's is the men's, and the one that says men's is the women's.
What the fuck?
And, you know, the first time I was at that bar, because they had air hockey tournaments, and this was like 96 when I first moved to Boulder, I go into what says women's, and at that time, I was like, what? Oh, it's filthy in here, and why is there a trough on the floor, and there was only two stalls? I'm like, what the fuck? And so I go pee. This is, you know, not a pavement related story, but this is why this confused me in Omaha a couple of years later. I'm sitting in the stall and I'm peeing, and then I hear some dudes come in, and they're talking about how, like, the last time, you know, and I'm like, oh fuck, that trough is, instead of urinals, is where, you know, they just pee in the trough on the floor. And I'm like, oh shit. But, you know, I'm sitting here thinking, okay, there were no dudes in here when I got here, so if I just stay in here long enough, it'll get clear.
It'll be dude-free again.
Yeah. So I'm sitting there, and it, like, for what feels like forever, and just dude after dude comes in, and one dude comes in, and he's like, oh, whew, last time I was in here, there was a chick in here. And I was like, that's my cue. So I, like, bust out of the stall, and I'm like, yep, there's a chick in here again. Sorry. And I just walked out, right? So here I am in another women's bathroom with urinals, but I'm not going to be trick this time. So I walk back out and I like see if it's like a trick where it's like pointing to a different door. But it definitely says women right on the door and there's no fingers pointing anywhere. And so this like cocktail waitress, and she's like, well, you know, I'm in my 20s, so I don't know how old she was. She seemed really old to be a cocktail waitress to me in my 20s, but, you know, maybe was like 30, had a hard life. I have no idea. But you know, she's like, can I help you? And I'm like, is this the women's bathroom? And she says to me, can't you read? And I'm like, that's twice tonight. Like, fuck, yes, I can read. Like, I'm just like, why are there urinals in here? Like, I felt like it was a trick again, and I didn't want to be tricked again. So already I'm just like out of sorts. And the show itself was like nothing to speak of. They were fighting and not really happy with each other. But, you know, after the show, we all went backstage and we just had to wait till everybody left, and they closed it down, but they left the bowling alley open for Pavement, so Pavement could bowl. And so we got to bowl with Pavement. Now, that was that was the time where Scott had recently gotten married. This was to his first wife, Chrissy, who's a doll too. And Westy was already married. Westy married young. And so I had in a Denver antique store, I saw this like cocktail set. It was a vintage cocktail set where all of the pieces had golf club handles or like were shaped like it was a golf themed like 1950s cocktail set. So I got that for Scott for a wedding present because he was into golf, because the free things from Crooked Rain was some golf tees, which I've since lost, and an ashtray, which I still have. It's on my table here. I can show it to you. But he was the big golfer in the group. So I got him this. And at the same place, I found this book. It was like from Boys Life magazine, but also from the 1950s. And it was like illustrated of like things, how to have a good boyhood. And so, you know, it talked about wrestling with your friends, and like showed all these like illustrations from the 1950s on how to wrestle with your friends, and a good summer job would be a caddy. And it was just like so dated and so funny. So I had bought that for Malcolmus, and because I thought he would appreciate it, but he was not receiving gifts at the time. So Westy said, inscribe it and I'll give it to him. And I don't know whatever happened with that, but the bowling was a blast. But we knew now that everybody was gone, that the only people left to jump us was going to be Pavement. Cause again, our car is dead in the parking lot.
Oh my God.
And so we're like wrapping up and we're like, could you guys give us a jump? And they were like, we think so. Like, do you have cables? And we're like, we think so. And so they had like a rental van, and, you know, again, Westy, my Eagle Scout, like he knows there's a right and a wrong way to jump a car, but none of us are exactly sure what the right and wrong way is.
Like, oh, it's one of my biggest fears as well. I have an irrational fear of it.
Yeah, like and when they popped the hood on their van, it didn't have the same kind of battery. So I was like, where do you even fucking connect this? Like it was pretty touch and go there for a while. But we decided we were going to leave both cars off, hook up all of them, all the cables, and then try to turn them on. And it worked, and nobody died. And that's how Pavement jumped my car in Omaha after a very bizarre night and adventure. And we got a new battery, and it kept dying on the way home. And it turned out that her trunk light was never going off, and so it was killing the batteries.
Oh, fuck.
So yeah, that was crazy. But those are the only shows I caught on Bright in the Corners. Those two shows, Denver with the Apples and Stereo, and this show here, and in Omaha, because it's hard to get. I was poor, and it was hard to get out of. So at that time, like me having over 30 shows, but not quite 40, there's people who have way, way more shows than me, because during Bright in the Corners, they toured a ton, but I was living in a place in a time with no money to be able to get anywhere to see shows. So I didn't get to see any. I got to see two at that time, where most people got to see like 10 in a week and stuff. So after in 98, I moved to Chicago, or 99, sorry, it was like January 1, 99. And there, they played a few times, and again, they probably like did maybe two tours, because they played in Chicago, and I knew that, like, in Chicago, I figured, again, there would be a lot of like celebrities backstage and stuff like that. So I wasn't going to like try to go backstage and hobnob, or maybe I even did and I just didn't stay long. I don't remember. But I knew I was going to Detroit. I was taking the train from Chicago and I was going to be back in Detroit. But this time I was going to meet up with a Pave lister named Rob. He had been on the Pavement list since like Crooked Rain or whatever. And he was coming down from Pittsburgh. And so it was like the first time I was willing to like meet somebody that, you know, I didn't know. Because we were talking about Pavement on the internet. And so Rob picked me up at the train station. And, you know, the first thing he told me is that he had a serious girlfriend. And I'm all like, I'm not trying to get on you. And the thing was, my friend Joe, who made that Dancing with Elders single.
Yeah.
He just bought a house in Detroit. He was a big Detroit. He was born and raised there, and he was just super pro Detroit, and he really wanted to rebuild Detroit. And so he bought this house, and so, you know, he's like, yeah, you can totally crash with me. So I was like, yeah, I got a place to stay. And he's like, okay, well, let's go there first. And we go over to Joe's house, and it's in a rough neighborhood. Like, he's got a corner lot, but that's but that's because everything else is like demolished or burnt out, you know.
Oh,
and he
shit.
Opens his door, and like every floor surface, stairs, every room is just linoleum. But what Rob notices is that there is a bajillion dishes like in the sink, on the counters, flowing out. And we're like, what's going on there? And he's like, oh, we're just having this standoff. Like, we're out of dish soap and nobody wants to buy it. Cause I think he had roommates or something. And so we go, we're like, we're going to try to find something to eat. And Rob's like, let's get him some dish soap. But, he takes us up to our room and he opens the door, and it's just this stained mattress on the floor. That's all we've got. and I could just Rob going, shit, like, how am I going to explain this to my girlfriend? I'm like, for the last time, I am not trying to get on you. like, don't worry, we can sleep head to feet. Like, if that's going to make you feel better, or, you know, you can sleep on the floor, or, you know, maybe I don't want to sleep on a stained mattress. I don't know. We'll just see how I feel after the show and how tired I am. But like, I'm just like, oh, geez, Joe, like, you didn't have any, like, it was not, you know, like, it didn't even occur to Joe that he should make it nice for guests. Like, it was just like, you need a place to crash is what to get. And so, we get to the show, and I don't know if Rob had met Pavement before that, but pretty much if you hung out with me, you were going to get to meet Pavement, and at least back then. And we get to the show, and it was a blast, and he had a blast, and we went backstage afterwards, and you know, he was just starstruck that he got to have such good one-on-one time with him. And so he said, you know, I'm driving to Toronto next and meeting up with another Pave lister named Randall. It's Randall Spencer Mindel. You know, and I'm sure Randall wouldn't mind if you stayed there, and I'm pretty sure we'll have something better than a mattress floor to sting. And I was like, yeah, I'm down. If I can get on a train, you know, back in Pittsburgh to Chicago. And we figured it out. And so, you know, that next day we're going to head out to Toronto together after just meeting hours earlier. He had lost all worry that I was going to jump him, I guess. And we go to eat just around the corner. So it was me and Joe and Joe's girlfriend at the time, who I don't remember her name, and Rob, and I had to use the restroom. So I go into the restroom, and when I come out, like, they're like under the table, and like it's like chaos and people are screaming, and I'm all like, what happened? But right next to St. Andrews was this club called Legends, and Legends let out, and that crowd like to just shoot guns in the air, I guess, as they walk back to the car.
Fuck.
So Rob liked to say that he was involved with a walk-by shooting. They didn't shoot into the restaurant. It's just guns were going off nearby. So that was a pretty exciting Detroit experience. I think that was his first and maybe only Detroit experience, which I had never been there when Legends let out and guns went off. Oh. But it seemed like it was pretty exciting. So the
how
next
was your trip to Toronto?
It was nice. Well, I'd never been. And back then, you didn't need passports or anything.
No, just driver's license. Yeah.
You just crossed the border there in Windsor and they were that's they right. didn't care. And so we go to Toronto. And what I remember about being there, like Randall really wanted, I mean, I think we called him Spencer. I don't think we called him by his first name. I think we called him Spencer. Really wanted to take Rob to Chinatown to try boba tea. Okay. I think that was kind of new to everybody back in 1999. And because Rob had never had it, but I had, you know, sucking gooey balls up through a straw did not sound good to me, but they were super excited to drink this stuff. So we walked around Chinatown for a while and we all went to the show. Well, I think we took separate cars or maybe Spencer met somebody there, but we all went to the show together. And at that time they had Deb as their tour manager. And we had met Deb the night before in Detroit and she was lovely and fun. But in Toronto, she showed up, she was roller skating around whatever this place was. I don't even know the name of the venue. And she was having a ball. And she was like, oh yeah, let me get you some passes and, you know, wait till after the show and stuff like that. And what I remember about that show is Bob called out a dedication to me, and then Steven decided to play Stop Breathing. Like, I was like, what? Like, why? When we drove back, and this again, like, I think, yeah, I didn't have my first cell phone, I think, until 2001. So again, no cell phones, no GPS. We had an address, and Rob thought he knew the way back to Spencer's house. And we got back to where we thought was Spencer's house, but we thought Spencer would have left like a light on for us or something. And there was no lights on. And so we were like, oh, it's late and we got to be on the road in like 4 hours and we don't want to knock on somebody else's door in the morning. So we just slept in Rob's car and then, you know,
my God. Somehow
woke up when daylight broke. And all sore because again it wasn't a very it wasn't great. But when the daylight came, we were definitely in front of his house. He just didn't leave any lights on. But we had a train to catch, or I had a train to catch, so we had to haul ass from Toronto back to Pittsburgh so I could get on that train. But on the way there, well, I guess I don't know on the way there or what, but there was a second leg in like the fall again where. I would catch him in Chicago, but I didn't have a plan with Rob. I made a plan with some other listeners. There was a guy named Scott Callaghan who had actually done the official website for Pavement. By then they had a website called Pavement, the Rock Band or something like that.
Right.
And Scott Callaghan was like the web host and helped them like upload stuff like that. One of the oldest listeners who'd been around from the beginning was this guy named Bob Schwalina. And so I made a plan with Scott Callaghan that I would fly out to Baltimore, you know, Townsend, Maryland was where the show was. And we'd catch that show. And then we would take the back roads, you know, with a Silver Jews reference to Raleigh, North Carolina, where we meet up with another listener named Corey Rayborn, who was a massive taper at the time. And he had all the trading tapes things. And we would stay with Corey. Rob was living in Virginia at the time. And so he met up with me and Scott and Bob at Townsend and the White Stripes opened there. And it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I bet.
And Rob was just super excited to be with us again, that he decided he was going to also just come along with us, you know, at the last minute to Raleigh, which almost meet his he's now married with a kid to this woman that she didn't want him to go because I don't remember exactly what was going on at the time, but he was just like, I got her, I just, you know, this is once in a lifetime. And he's like, I might not have a fiance after this. But he came with us and they played in like this carpet warehouse like converted carpet warehouse in Raleigh. And what I remember about that show was like, we get in there and there's this woman who's just like stretching out, like she's, you know, like just really stretching out, because, and her name was Lindsay, and she was a kind of a newer lister, like maybe from the Bright in the Corner era, like around this time, but she liked to dance like crazy. So she definitely like made sure she was limber before the show, and she's in there just like, stretching out. And that was kind of funny.
That night,
like Corey didn't want to hang out. He had just started law school and he didn't like being out late on a school night. And so we didn't hang out with the band or anything like that, that show. But they were coming to Chicago soon enough. And another lister named Katie Linden, she went by the name Wonder Llama on the pavement list. She started the first Bob Nastanovich fan page on the internet, which we all didn't know at the time. She was only 14 when she did it.
Oh my God.
So at this time she's 18 years old and she's at the University of Michigan. And she writes to me and says, "Hey, I'd like to take the train up to see Pavement, you know, at the Metro. Can I crash with you?" And I, you know, at this time I was open to those kind of things. And I was like, absolutely. And I was excited because she was so funny. Like on the internet, like she was just very witty and just very clever. So when I went to the train station to pick her up, I wasn't even sure I had the right person because she was extremely shy. Like she couldn't make eye contact. She didn't want to, like, she was just like so meek. And I was like, it's so crazy how it's a different personality if you're not in person. Right. But Wonder she was going to meet Bob that night. Like that was going to happen. Right. Like she was definitely going to meet Bob. And I thought she'd be like super excited about it. And he was definitely super excited to meet her, but she was just like mortified, like, oh God, like, I don't know if I can do this. But, it was a fun show. I can't tell you like the highlights of it or anything. It's mostly the backstage stuff.
Yeah.
That Chrissy was there, which again was Scott's first wife. And, she like, you know, was telling, you know, she was just real good about like, you know, telling us all the best secrets and things like that and debunking things that they, the myths and stuff. But Scott pulled me aside. This was October 15th. I got my backstage pass from that show. It was at the Vic there.
Very cool. Jen is showing it to me right now.
October 15th, 1999. But at that show, that was my 19th show. And I was telling them that. And Scott said, "Well, if you want to see 20, you got to make it to Cincy tomorrow night because that's the last show in the U.S. and we're breaking up after this tour," which shattered my fucking world.
Yeah.
But also was like, well, fuck yeah, I got to figure out how to get to Cincy tomorrow, you know, like with no notice. So we had to hightail it out of there because there was plans to be made because I was carless still and didn't have a credit card. Katie had a credit card, but she wasn't old enough to rent a car. And I was like, what are we, you know, the train schedule wasn't going to work because it takes too long, you know, and buses weren't going to work. So the only thing I could think was I got to borrow my parents' car. And my parents' car was in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and we were in Chicago. So that's already 4 hours away.
Oh,
and then Cincinnati is like 5 hours from there. But if we were on the very first train to Ann Arbor and got the car right away and got on the road to Cincinnati, we would make it. So for now I got to, you know, at like 2 o'clock in the morning, get a hold of my parents to find out if I can borrow a car. So, you know, they have an answering machine, the old kind with the tape.
Yeah,
so you hear the messages, it's being recorded. And I'm just screaming, "Wake up, it's an emergency." You know, like, because the machine's in a different room than them. So I'm just screaming into the phone over and over as fast as I can dial and hang up. And my mom gets on the phone and she's like, what, where are you? Are you okay? What's happening? And I'm like, I need to borrow the car. And she was like, what? Like, I thought you were in trouble. And I'm like, I am. If I don't get to Cincinnati tomorrow, I'm not going to see 20 people show. You know, this is an emergency. And she's like, well, how are you going to get here? And I tell her the plan. And she's like, yeah, just I'll meet you at the train station. So it was on. It was on. So Katie was able to rent or reserve a hotel room for us in Cincinnati for this show with her credit card. So we had a place to stay. We just, she didn't know how to drive. So I had to do all the driving for that too. So it was a really long day to get there on top of knowing that this was the end. So it was kind of emotionally heavy for me.
Yeah. I bet.
And it was good though. And there I met another pavelister I'd never met before. Her name is Carrie Pepperman. And Lindsay was there too, the dancer lady, and she brought apples from her tree in her yard. I guess she went to UVA as well. And I don't know if that meant she was there at the same time as Bob and Scott and David DC Berman or whatever, and Westy, she was there too. And Chrissy was there, Scott's wife. And so I took everybody back to meet him because I knew this. I wasn't telling everybody at the time, you know, like Katie had heard it because she was with me, but I wasn't telling all these other people what I'd heard. I immediately emailed Botch and was like, is it true? And he was like, it depends on if your cup half full or cup half empty. I mean, it's true for now, you know, who knows how long it'll be. I'm like, oh God. And at that point there was a disk server pavement web board, just called, I don't know, Paveboard or something like that. And that's where a lot of the like Bright in the Corners, where Twilight fans were, but also where like the listers had started like posting. I don't know. That's, I think, where I met Carrie. Was maybe she was on the web board and not on the pavement list. But I remember I stupidly was like, oh, you know, like it's the end of the rock and roll era. That was the last.
Oh, man.
And like nobody fucking believed me. There was this kid, I won't name names because he did some other internet stuff that made him a little bit more famous, but he was a kid at the time. And he like said, listen, star fucker, did from your moderately attractive cloud, maybe, like, I don't know. He was just like, he did not believe me. And I'm like, listen, you don't have to believe me, you know, but I've never fucked any of them. And, it was just really like, I mean, it was just crazy how people were just like, you're wrong. And I'm like, okay. I'll just suffer alone in this knowledge that this was the last we were going to see them in the US. And it was until 2010. That was pretty funny, but that's when I was living in Chicago at that point, since January, but I did meet Botch backstage the night before Cincinnati. That was probably when I met him in person after emailing him for years. And that's where we became friends in person. So he would, you know,
still
didn't have a car that he would drive me to concerts and things like that. That was a interesting era. So, it was pretty, pretty sad for a while.
Yeah,
like it was still like, it took a while after the Brixton show where he had handcuffs and said, being in a band is like, whatever. Like then people started to kind of believe it, but that was months later.
How did you hear about that moment? Through the boards?
I mean, because, you know, we had the web board, so people were,
People were talking about it.
About who were there.
People who were at the Brixton show. Right.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah. So, you know, then people started to believe it, but they thought, oh, it's just, you know, Malcolmus just needs to cool off, you know, because he's definitely the one that was not happy anymore. So this is my, probably my last story here. Flash forward to 2003 and the Jicks are touring and they're botched. I'm at the Jick show in Chicago and Botch goes, hey, they've been practicing some Pavement songs. And if you want to hear a couple Pavement songs, you need to get to Milwaukee tomorrow night. And I'm like, how many? And he's like, a couple. They'll probably play them in the encore. And I'm all like, how big of a fucking junkie am I that I'm going to drive to Milwaukee to see maybe a couple Pavement songs? But I know enough that I got to trust Botch's tips.
Yeah.
So we drive to, I mean, it's maybe 2 hours away, but it was like in a, it was in a, like a, student rec hall type place in a, on campus, and it was really small, and like there was no alcohol. They were just selling pops out of coolers, and like it was just like I just felt like I just kept being like, I'm such a fucking junkie. Like I just need a fix. Like this is so dumb. This is so dumb. For maybe a couple songs and an encore. Now, this is also caused internet fights. Malcolmus comes out by himself, okay, and he plays She Believes.
Really?
And people are just, everybody's just stunned, and I'm all like,
yeah,
was that it? Was that the one song, you know? And he goes off stage, and they come out, and I don't remember what the next song was, but by Summer Babe, I'm like, holy fuck. This is going to be a whole Pavement set, and nobody's going to believe it. Just like they didn't believe me when Pavement broke up. And at work, they had just issued me this thing called a Sony Clié, which was like Sony's answers to the Palm Pilot, but it had a voice recorder on it. And I was like, I have got to record this because nobody is going to fucking believe this happened. So I have my Sony Clié, and I hit, but it's mostly a voice recorder, so it's not going to make a very good music recording thing. But I see at the soundboard there's like things plugged into it, so there's got to be another recording. But to this day, no other recording has ever been issued.
Really?
So I'm holding it for a while, you know. And they just the Jicks play an entire Pavement show in chronological order. So you know, as they're going down the catalog. And I hear somebody call out for something that's on another record. I'm like, they've already passed that record. And I like the loudest thing on this tape I made or this recording I made is my fucking snarky comments. But at some point I hand it to my boyfriend because, you know, I've got dancing to do, and he puts it in his pocket. So then it gets even more muffled. It's a terrible recording, but it's the only proof that this happened. And I don't even know where the original is anymore. Somebody sent me a scrubbed version where they could kind of tone down my vocals of me being all snarky about people calling stuff out. But it's the only one. I mean, I don't know if he's holding it for some time to release it or whatever, but he became lore, you know, because again, this is Milwaukee, like a early show. And like, why the fuck did they do that there? I don't know. Maybe because it was low stakes, like nobody important was going to be there and it wasn't going to be, you know, but it was the only time they did that. Now, flash forward to 2010 and Pavement's coming back to Milwaukee, and the Milwaukee music scene is just like, you know, they're finally gracing us again, but we did have that one show that was so special. And, you know, here's the set list, and the set list is not right. I mean, I have a recording. It shows you exactly what what got played, at least from this half of the starting the second song that the whole band played halfway through that all the way through the end. So the set list is not in the right order, and it's not even the songs necessarily they played, because there's a recording of that. And I say, actually, he came out and he played She Believes first by himself. And they're like, no, he didn't. Look, here's the set list. And I'm like, were you there? Because it happened. And people were just like, nah, you know, wanting to fight with me on the internet. And I'm like, you know what? Fuck it. You know, my boyfriend was there. He remembers it. So in Iceland, I went to Iceland, and I was talking to Malcolmus on that last night. And I was like, do you remember that show? And he's like, oh, yeah, yeah. And I said, did you come out and play She Believes first and then go back and then the rest of the band? And he's like, I believe that's exactly what happened. But, you know, like, and I'm like, are you right? It did. And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, people wanted to fucking fight me about that. Like,
that's awesome.
Why would I make this up? But that part I didn't record because I wasn't ready for it. But, but you know, he validated me later. You know, so
yes, and that, he did it playfully as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah, he was in such good spirits. That was like this 2022. They're older. They're wiser. They're letting bygones be bygones. They're really.
It's been a lot of fun.
So
I wish I had ample resources so I could go to South America.
Oh Oh, I know. I was telling my husband, like, please, let's just do that this year. And he was like, I don't want to be in South America. Yeah. So we just got to hope that they'll like do another one for Wowie Zowie's, you know, 20-30 year thing or whatever. Who knows? But because I asked Botch after New Zealand, how long do I have to live to see pavement in U.S. soil again? And he's like, you got to live 5 years. Oh, and I'm like, I think I can live 5 years.
That's good. Okay. I want to ask you if you're ready to talk about song number 10.
Sure.
Okay. So what we're going to do is we're going to flip the record and we're going to come back on the other side and talk about song number 10. And we'll be right back after this.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
It can get lonely climbing Mount McKinley, so to entertain myself, I go to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, I can play hundreds of online casino-style games for free, like online slots, bingo, slingo, and more. Plus, I get a daily login bonus. It's just too bad that up here, I don't have anyone to share my excitement with. Woohoo! Woo-hoo!
Live the Chumba life anytime, anywhere. Play for free now at ChumbaCasino.com. VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Hey, this is Bob Nastanovich from Pavement. Thanks for listening. And now on with a countdown.
This week on the show, we finally crack into the top 10 on the countdown. And Jen Echo is here to talk to me about number 10, fucking Elevate Me Later. This is a great song to kick it off. Jen, what is your what are your initial thoughts about Elevate Me Later?
Well, I could tell you in 94, I was really waiting for this record to come out. And to me, this song, I thought this could have been the opener on the record. It sounded like it could have been from the Watery Domestic like recording session, because it just had a more of that kind of smooth feel to it. And I think they track that record great still,
because I do too. Yeah, you
know, Silent Kit comes out kicking your butt, and then this one kind of is
absolutely
like a nice, fun tongue in cheek of like, you know, as far as what I think it was about, like. When I first heard this was going to be my song, my first thought was, I remember thinking Malcolmus had to be like prophetic, and because it came out before the OJ trial, but like this idea that the courthouse was dark for press, although that one was pretty light on TV, and this idea of like famous people living lives now that we see like on TV that like we didn't have, we could only imagine before, but now there you see like just how different their lives are. But
right,
you know, like when you know OJ's on trial for murdering his wife and just all the stuff around, you know, the court proceedings that, you know, were on there, I remember thinking, oh my god, like did he see this coming? But and then what I was talking about with Jess is how, because, you know, we were seeing a lot of shows and stuff. One of my favorite things about this song is that with about like 45 seconds left into it, they let Westy go ape shit. Like it's the end, like just go nuts and blah, 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 drum, 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 drum. And then they pause. And like, we would love it when the crowd would start going, woo! We're like, no, not yet. there's still an outro to happen, you know. But like this idea that, like, you know, it was one of their first songs where they started playing with that kind of timing, where it would like kind of pause for a second. And you're like, oh, is it over? Oh, wait, no, there's still some more. But it was the idea that Westy got to really go bomb, and that was our introduction to Westy, right? Like, I don't even know.
Yeah,
I know I didn't know ahead of time that Gary was gone. You know, and so, you know,
right,
cut your
right.
hair and the second drummers drown and stuff. Like this was the first introduction we had to Westy. And, you know, so it was that those were the thoughts I had about that song. Like, I love the I told you earlier, like the Kentucky Cocktail and circa 1762. Watery Domestic, and like this song I feel like is in that same kind of I don't know if he wrote them at the same time, but it kind of has a similar feel, and that's the kind I love that stuff. I love that era of Pavement. So this was one of my favorite songs. And what I also remember is that on set lists, at least in the early days, they called this LS2, but they called it but if you look, like LS2, that's like on like whatever they released when they released the like whatever, is totally different lyrics. It's the same music but different lyrics. But that wasn't the case.
Yes.
That's how they referenced Elevate Me Later on all their set lists very early on. So LS2 is what we thought it was called until the record came out. And we were happy it was on there, because it's more melodic, and it just feels like more mature than some of their songs. It just keeps going, right? I mean, Grounded then comes to be their like their up, you know, where it really all comes together. But Elevate Me Later is just it was just one of many great songs on Crooked Rain.
Yes.
And I was really looking forward to that record, and this is one of my favorite songs on that record for sure. And yeah, I remember reading, because Liz Phair was blowing up at the time, and reading a thing about her, about how she was playing Crooked Rain, and she's going on her runs around Lake Michigan, and I was like, oh, she's just like me.
That's so
I wasn't running around Lake Michigan, but just this idea that, like, you know, other ladies liked Pavement, because we were pretty rare, us ladies who liked Pavement,
yeah,
in the early days. But you know, some of those songs aren't good to run to, but I feel like it definitely is a great sophomoric effort. It definitely sounded a lot different than Slanted, and it was definitely a window of what was to come. And I think Elevate Me Later, LST, really is that showcase of how they become way more competent in their playing and just kind of the sound they were going to be going for a little bit.
Yeah.
They didn't stay there for very long, but that's some of my favorite era of Pavement.
Oh, that's nice. Do you think, I mean, after talking about it so poetically and lovely, we're going to get into the nuts and bolts here. Do you think the song is rated properly? Do you think it made crack in the top 10 at number 10? Do you think it's rated properly, or is it overrated, underrated, or just right?
Well, gosh, I don't know if it'd be my top 10.
Okay.
It would be my top 20 of their songs. I feel like, you know, there's ones I like better, but I do think it's a great, great song. So I think it's, I don't know what else is on the countdown and how it was, what else it might have been, how it, you know, but I feel
how it's all going to shake down. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how it's all going to shake down. Cause you know, when they did that contest for, the Quarantine the Past, and right, they asked, you know, like everybody to submit their whatever top 25 or however it went. Like, I was so wrong. like it was like nothing like I thought it would come out, you know? So, like, I wasn't even close. So I definitely, because, you know, they say that, like, the music you hear when you're 16, 17 years old really is your heart and soul, you know? And,
yeah.
And so mine's definitely earlier Pavement. So I just feel like, I mean, my favorite Pavement song of all time would be Perfume D. And,
that's a good choice.
And always been always forever. That's always been my favorite song. I just love the play on words and the vivid scenery, you know, that he draws there, I've loved that song since I was 18, 19 years old. So that's probably my favorite. And so I tend to like those songs, like that era, better, but I think 10's probably fair. 10's probably
okay.
Fair.
Okay. I like it that you went in a little harsh at the top, saying top 20, and then you came back around, because they're all your babies.
They are. And like, if as far as what was on the original albums, it's definitely in the top 10 of that. You know what I mean? If we're not talking about Peel Session songs that were on, you know, B-sides and things like that, like of studio records and songs to choose from, that's definitely in the top 10 of that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's pretty properly rated.
Yeah, it's a great song. I mean, it's hard. It's really hard to say, you know. I mean, they've got so many great songs to choose from.
Well, they certainly do. And I want to thank you for joining me today. And wash your goddamn hands.
Thanks for listening to Meeting Malcolmus, a Pavement podcast, where we count down the top 50 Pavement tracks, as selected by you. If you've got questions or concerns, please shoot me an email.
jd.meetingmalcolmus@gmail.com. Duvra! Podcasts and such.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. And now I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free and each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.